We are live this hour and glad to have you here on Ask the Expert with us and our guests this hour. We've got Roland and Doug Davis. That's Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers live here on Ask the Expert. Once again, no stranger to the WNIS microphones, and his guest for the hour, Mr. Doug Davis of the Davis Law Group as well. And what an important topic and conversation we're going to have here today. I'm so excited to have it. And Roland, welcome back, my friend. How are you this week?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Great. Glad to have you in here again. And we're talking about kind of focusing towards the business owner, of course, with Davis Business Appraisers. Will you start the show off and tell our listeners that have just talked to you or hearing from you for the very first time what exactly you do and who you focus on so they can reach out to their loved ones that this is going to affect the most and maybe help change their life in the most positive way possible?
What I always say is that business owners know what their car is worth, what their home is worth, what their stocks are worth, but probably the biggest asset they have is their business. And they have no earthly idea what it's worth. And then when tragedy occurs or hardships occur, they're forced in the position to try to deal with it. I do valuations. I look at the entire business. And not only do I can tell them what's worth and what the fair market value is, but I also advise them of what they can do as they go forward to make the business more valuable. And in a nutshell, that's the purpose. The purpose is to help the small, medium business owner to allow them to have a resource that can give them a defined objective and value for that business.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm excited for the conversation today, and you've brought a guest with you, Mr. Doug Davis.
Right. Doug's an attorney in Chesapeake, and we are not related. That needs to be repeated often during the show.
He would love to be related to me.
But I thought that the great thing that we could do today is, you know, when people engage me to value the business, it's always my side of the equation is the valuation, the appraisal, and the purpose. And one of the purposes, more often than not, also straddles the legal side of the world, whether it's trust, whether it's disputes, whether it's divorce, whether it's gifting to your children. So I've invited Doug to be here today to sort of bounce off things that I've seen and how that, on the legal part of the equation, as he sees it with clients and can help. So hopefully this will be a good discussion. I want to start off with partnership, disputes, and divorce. And one of the things when I come into that conference with the owners initially, you know, that's a contentious situation. And the first thing I'll look at is the bylaws, the shareholder agreement, the operating agreement. I want to see if there's anything defined. And so I'll turn to Doug and say, is that something that most business owners lack in their structure?
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's one of the primary things we notice over the years is that a lot of business owners are very good at operating their business. They have a lot of great ideas, and they may even be very successful business people. But a lot of times, you know, as business owners, we tend to kind of neglect those things that we consider to be kind of behind the scenes but if you think about it, they're really foundational. And if you've got, particularly if you've got partners who you're involved with in the business, having a shareholder agreement that describes, you know, your obligations, your rights, what happens if there's a sale to the company, what happens if somebody passes away, what happens if somebody is terminated as an employee, but they're still a shareholder, those kinds of things are very important. And then Roland, of course, is going to be involved in valuing assets. And, we'll have a valuation method that we're going to utilize in terms of determining what the value of the company is and who's paying what and how it's going to be paid. So, I mean, it's fundamental. It's a foundational part of a business structure, but it's often neglected.
Right. And that's what I find. I find that most don't have that defined, and that is a tremendous problem, especially when you get into a divorce situation or partnership disputes. And I think that I want to make sure that everyone understands in valuations of a small business or a business is that, you know, a minority ownership is 50%. Most people go into it and they say it's a 50-50 arrangement, we're equal partners. That's probably the worst thing that you can have. but 50-50 is actually minority ownership because you don't have any control, you can't make decisions, and it paralyzes the business when those two 50-50 owners have no ability to get together anymore. They can be your best friends, and then they again, it becomes acidic. So, Doug, how do you legally, is there a way in this that a 50-50 environment can be structured better, or is it just an abyss that we can't get out of?
Well, that's a great question because a lot of times I've found that it's not those 50-50 partners that end up being the problem. It's that one of them is married to the evil spouse, you know, or something like that. Or one of them, you know, injures somebody in a car accident and now, you know, they've got a major potential liability and it affects the entire firm, or they've spent too much money on the personal side and they're constantly begging for money from the business. So there are things like that that happen. But structuring it as 50-50 is going to be problematic no matter how you try to do the shareholder agreements, because you can lay out as much detail as you want in bylaws or shareholder agreements, but it's really going to come down to how those people get along in the business and their relationship personally. And that's going to be affected in many times going to be affected by, you know, their family, their friends, other people who are speaking into their ear. So it's difficult.
Right. And my thing with the 50-50 is I just emphasize that. However, when we talk valuations of partnerships, when you have less than 50% or less, it's called a minority shareholder, that brings up, in my world, discounts. Mm-hmm. And discounts for marketability, discounts for control, discounts for voting versus non-voting, discounts for general versus member in an LLC. And I think that those discounts play a big role in the decision and the ability to find a negotiation after my valuation that's palatable to both parties. And so, you know, I think that that is something that on the legal side of the house, sort of the preparation needs to be made to the owner who is going to be affected by the dispute, that, hey, there are going to be discounts involved, but you have to, he'll give you the fair market value of the business, but it's going to be a little bit of more of a mediation negotiation once that valuation comes out.
Right. And I mean, you know, that's where the shareholder agreement is so important is, you know, those discounts are available, but if the shareholders in an agreement agree that there aren't going to be those minority or lack of marketability discounts applied in evaluation, then the agreement would control, even though normally they would be applied. So sometimes somebody who's, you know, in kind of the power position in the company can say, look, you know, if I go out and you're required to purchase my shares, no minority or marketability or lack of control discounts will be applied. So, yeah, the shareholder agreement is going to define what applies, what doesn't apply, what the valuation formula is, who's going to determine the value of the company, how is it going to be determined, those kinds of things.
And that's why I brought Doug on tonight, because I want you to realize that there are many parts to the wheel of doing this type of project. And these are the questions that I will be asking them when I first have a discussion. And usually the initial discussion is the toughest discussion because it is an acidic situation that's going on and they're trying to find a way to resolve it. And so the reason I come in, I do a fair market value. But as Doug was saying, if you don't have control, then to find an investor, to find a buyer, or to even accommodate that situation, there are going to be discounts for minority shareholders because, Damien, you would not buy. If I own 20% of Doug's company, you wouldn't buy that 20% as much as you would buy 100% of that company, because then you can control it all. And so it's marketability, it's control. And it's also when you get to S corporations, voting versus non-voting, again, going into that. And Doug, tell us, I think with a lot of owners have S corporations because they're tax efficient and they're really a great way to structure a business. But tell us about the percentage that you need in an S corporation in order to have absolute control.
Well, I mean, usually you're going to want to have more than 51%. Most shareholder agreements, most bylaws have a 67% required to terminate the company, file bankruptcy, do those types of things. So if you want absolute control in any situation, you're going to want at least 67%. And so that's another common misunderstanding is as long as I've got 51%, I'm in good shape. Not always. And it depends on the situation.
I've got a question for you, but before that, I want to let everybody know that's listening. We are live this hour at 6:18, and if you have a question, you can join us, 627-7979. Don't be shy, but join the show, 627-7979, or get your questions answered off of the air. You can call Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers. Call him at 757-410-3850. That's 410-3851. Or dbavalue.com. That's DBA for Davis Business Appraisers, value, dbavalue.com. We'll repeat that before the end of the show, as well as Mr. Doug Davis, who we're listening to as well with the Davis Law Group. You can call him at 420-7722, 420-7722, or online at dlgva.com. And we'll repeat those as well throughout the remainder of this show. But would it be in the shareholder agreement and the bylaws? You're talking about having a 51% ownership, thinking you have a majority, you have some big shoulders, you know, but you really don't. And then you said, well, sometimes you're married to the, you know, your partner's cool, but his spouse isn't that cool. And well, if his spouse is his partner who owns 50% of his stuff, does his partner own part of my company if we're partners and then they get divorced and she wants to go after everything he has? Does that include what he and me have, which is my question, as well as what if my partner dies and now his wife is his heir? I don't know the right word, but now how is she part of my, and I don't want her as part of my business, and if I don't have 67%, how do you work that out? Or is that something that needs to be in the bylaws and needs to be understood beforehand?
Yeah, Damien, I mean, that's exactly what we face all the time. And we call those things that you identified, we call those triggering events. So you have a number of different potential triggering events. So let's say you have a shareholder who's an employee and you have to terminate them, or they retire, but they still own a piece of the rock. So they're no longer an employee. How do you get the shares back? Same thing happens if somebody's incapacitated and they're no longer able to provide services to the company. What do you do then? What if they go through a divorce? Does their spouse have a potential claim to those shares? What if they pass away? What happens to those shares? Well, normally the answer is unless you have a plan, all of those things can happen. And so what you want to do is structure buy-sell provisions in your shareholder agreement so that what ends up happening ultimately is either the remaining shareholders receive or purchase all those outstanding shares in return for value that's determined by Roland Davis. And that goes to the heirs or to that to the heirs or to the person who has left the company. But you get the stock back. So now you've got control. So triggering events should be addressed in every buy, sell, and every shareholder agreement so that everybody knows ahead of time. If this situation occurs in the future, then here's how we're going to deal with it, and here's how you're going to get paid.
And that's Roland Davis of Davis Business Appraisers, by the way, just so we're clear. And in my world, and Damien, if you own 20% versus you owning 40%, in that S corporation, the discounts are going to be more severe in the 20% than the 40%, because you actually have some ability to stop him from collapsing that corporation.
Now, what are discounts? You've said that a few times. What are those?
Well, discounts simply, if the fair market value of the business is $100, and you say, well, I own 20%, I should be getting $20. Well, that's not true. You will probably get 18, 14, 12, depending on a lot of circumstances. So your value of your 20% is not $20. It's less.
So especially if you have a smaller portion of the pie, you actually have even smaller of a portion of a pie.
Right. And in this S-corporation okay. situation, the 67% is what's called supermajority. Mm-hmm. And that is a thing. I do also, the last part of this equation, mm-hmm. okay, is that the spouse situation, I think, is important to a lot of business owners. It comes up. And obviously there's fairness involved, et cetera. But how do you structure that in a shareholder agreement so that if that problem does come up in the future, that the partners all feel that they're not going to be dragged down the sewer because of a messy divorce?
Yeah, what you do is you build in what's called a spousal waiver, and you require the spouses of all the shareholders to sign off on this. And basically, they're saying, we're giving up all claims to our spouse's shares in this company. Excuse me. If you live in a community property state, we're not a community property state here in Virginia, but if you live in one, it's pretty common to have a spousal waiver because by law, spouses have a 50% interest in anything that you own while you're married. Unless there was a premarital agreement.
And I've also seen, though, where they have, in certain situations, it's primarily when I value law firms, that they have definitive values that instead of the full waiver, they have a value that this is X, what they will be paid, if that.
Well, awesome. And again, my friends, we are live here this hour. I know everybody listening has questions. You can join the show, 627-7979, or better yet, call Roland Davis off of the air. Call Davis Business Appraisers, 757-410-3851. That's 410-3851, or dbavalue.com. dbavalue.com for Davis Business Appraisers with Mr. Roland Davis here this hour, and our special guest, Mr. Doug Davis, here live until the end of this hour. So join the show, 627-7979. Now, we've only got about 4 minutes or so before we've got to take a quick little break for the news, and then we'll be back here live until 7 o'clock. So although we only have a couple minutes to kind of preamble the next half of the show, what do you guys want to talk about on the next side of the break that people need to know about, you know, owning businesses and yourself about that, about business appraisers?
And what I see a lot today, and what I do a lot of evaluations for, is what the second half is going to be about, is the gifting of shares. They want to gift shares to their kids, or they want to set it up so down the road, that this transition would occur. And so that's a lot different than a partnership dispute or an adversarial situation. So after the break, we'll go into the gifting of shares with Doug and myself and how that's handled. The last thing I would like to say to you is that as a business grows and you're a business owner, there's always the desire to have more equity partners. And, you know, it's a great desire, but it's really tangles everything up at the end, value-wise and for acquisition purposes. I sold a company about 10 years ago that had 20 shareholders, 10 of which were deceased, and it was estate to estate to estate, and they had to get a release from all 20 to sell the company. And of course, there were some in Florida that didn't even know they had shares in the company. So you have to be very conscious of the fact as a business owner that equity is very valuable to you, because situations will come down the road that you're not sure how to handle. And do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Having business partners or additional shareholders, you know, you're getting married, and it's all about money at that point. And so a lot of things that you had planned can go sour pretty quickly if your partner doesn't agree exactly on how things are going to be accomplished or how you want to proceed. So you may have one person who wants to do a sale of the business, and the other partner just says, no, we're not going to be doing that. Or you have a situation where somebody wants to take out let's just say it's a simple thing. We need a line of credit. But one of the partners isn't very strong financially on the personal side. Now you can't get a line of credit. So we've seen all kinds of things rolling over the years. But, yeah, anytime you have partners, it can cause some problems. And that's why having agreements between the partners is so important.
Now, I like the way you put that. You're married to these people. And I'm just thinking, I'm married on my first marriage, luckily, still, for 7 years now. But could you imagine having two wives or three or five wives? How about seven different wives that all think they have equal share at the oh, my goodness. How many of them are going to crumble? And they're all related to money. Man, you need to know what the score is and know what what you're working with when it comes to your business and business of your loved ones. We're talking about to Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers. Call him up because we've got to go to a quick break, but call Roland at 757-410-3851. That's 410-3851. Or join us here live this hour on Ask the Expert. We'll be right back with Roland Davis and Doug Davis right here on Ask the Expert. It's News Talk 790 WNIS. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. 6:35. Glad to have you here on Ask the Expert here on News Talk 790 WNIS. Listen online, by the way, WNIS.com. You click the Listen Live button and take us with you everywhere. And the WNIS app. Download the app everywhere you get your apps and enjoy this show with, you know, uninterrupted quality. As long as you have internet reception. We're here on Ask the Expert this hour with Davis Business Appraisers. Mr. Roland Davis is here with us, as well as Mr. Doug Davis, not related, of Davis Law Group. So a very informative conversation, one that you need to be in part of. If you're a business owner or a relative of a business owner, get them listening. Your friend, your loved one, get them listening and make sure that they know the information they need to know to make the best decision that they can for their baby, their business. That's what we're talking about this hour. With Davis Business Appraisers, Mr. Roland Davis and Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group. Gentlemen, welcome back and so glad to have you here on Ask the Expert.
Again, Damien, I want to emphasize we are not related by any means. We've gone back centuries and there's no relationship between us.
You guys look very similar, though.
Not really.
One of the discussions, and this is Roland Davis, by the way, one of the discussions that I have so often now over the course of the past few years is I'll have business owners who say to me, I want to start the process of gifting shares to my children. I want to start the process of looking at how this can be done. And to do a valuation of a business or an appraisal of a business for an acquisition or for disputes and partnership problems that we talked about last segment, obviously this is a much calmer process. However, valuations are valuations. They're based upon fair market value. And this process is why I wanted to have Doug here today. And Doug is with Davis Law Group in Chesapeake. But I want this because it's more of an education on the gifting of shares. And so many couples that I do sit down with, this is the discussion that goes on. You definitely need valuation. You definitely need to know the value of the business. Even if you're not going to gift today, if you're going to gift over the years to come, this is important. So I'm going to say to Doug, okay, Damien and his wife have come and they say to me, Roland, we've been told we need a value for the business because we are looking at the possibility of gifting shares to our son or daughter down the road. My first thing is say, have you talked to an attorney? And now why should they have talked to an attorney?
Well, I think the big deal is there's a three-step process to a gifting of shares. Step number one is you have to have a valuation done. Step number two is the actual gifting takes place. So the attorneys are going to put together the legal documentation required to make the transfer of shares to the next generation. And step number three that a lot of people don't realize is you're going to get with your CPA and you're going to file a Form 709 gift tax return with the IRS to let the IRS know what value you just transferred to your children. And one of the big misunderstandings here is that it's going to be taxed. And that may be the case if your current lifetime credit is less than $13 million. But right now it's $13 million. So you can gift stock to your kids with no tax as long as it's worth less than $13 million. And Roland is going to make that determination on his values. So that's why that's important. So basically, you file a gift tax return with the IRS just to kind of wave your arm in the air and say, hey, IRS, just want to let you know that I made this gift, and it's more than the $17,000 per year, so I'm required to file this tax return to let you know. If you gift less than $17,000 or up to $17,000 a year in stock, you don't even have to file a tax return. But in neither case do you pay taxes. And that's commonly misunderstood. Now, I will say that lifetime credit of $13 million is dropping down at the end. It's actually 2025. It drops to $5 million. So it's a significant change. And that's why a lot of our clients are looking at making this kind of transfer now while they have a $13 million credit instead of waiting until later. So the valuation becomes extremely important.
And I'm going to ask the question that I know the answer to. Why can't I just do this without a valuation? Why? What are the ramifications if they don't come to a business appraiser like myself to value the shares?
Well, I don't think you want the IRS knocking on your door, Roland, and that's exactly what happens. And right. So what ends up happening is the IRS can audit up to 7 years after the transaction. And what ends up often happening, I mean, I've had a few businesses who didn't do that, and they ended up having a visit from the IRS. And then the IRS imposes not only back taxes, but also penalties and interest. And that can put somebody down pretty quickly. Yeah.
Okay. And then the timing of this, when I say timing, from a valuation perspective, when the owners come to me, I say, you want to do this based upon the most recent full tax year that you filed. Maybe you've had a big contract come in. Maybe you've got a windfall that's happened. You don't want to do that during the middle of the year. You want to do it when you have the formalized tax return finished and filed. Is that usually the best advice?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the reasons is because most of the time we're dealing with S corporations. And so the revenues over expenses are allocated to the shareholders according to the percentage interest those shareholders hold. So if I own some stock until July, when I transfer it to you, Roland, as a gift, then what's going to end up happening is the next year a tax return would have to be filed showing that I owe taxes for the first 6-7 months, you owe taxes for the second, and our CPA is going to say, why didn't you just do this at the end of the year? So valuing it through the end of the year and then actually distributing the shares effective at year end, or at least at a minimum on a quarterly basis, is a really good idea. Otherwise, your CPA is going to show up at your door.
So I hand the value back obviously my engagement is direct with the business owner, and the business owner can provide it to whomever they want to. And if someone calls me up and says, Roland, did you do a valuation for Damien? My comment would be, you need to call Damien, because I do a confidential valuation. I don't tell anybody about it. I don't even tell myself in the mirror about it once it's done, et cetera. However, now we're going to go into a part of this equation. I call it the flow chart part of the equation. And the flow chart part of the equation is the fact that you gift the shares, or do you gift those shares to a trust? So I'm going to come out of the appraisal world. I've handed the valuation to Damien, who's then handed it to Doug Davis of Davis Law Group. Now, what choices do those business owners, that couple, have to do this for their children?
Well, there's a lot of choices. In some cases, we have business owners who are concerned about the ability of kids, or maybe little Johnny is married to the evil spouse, and they're concerned about that. So sometimes they'll gift those stocks those shares over to a trust that is, you know, receiving those shares on behalf of Johnny. And that's overseen by a trustee, and there are certain requirements as to how distributions are made and that kind of thing. And that really goes into a full estate planning analysis of how you should look at the entire situation and how you should structure an estate plan along with business succession. But there are a lot of factors. I mean, the other factor is, you know, do you really want a gift? And what are the implications? I mean, think about it. One of the first things we do is we say, all right, you want to gift half of your company. Let's take a look at your cash flow. Are you relying upon distributions from that 100 shares you want to give away in order to meet your monthly obligations? Because if you are, you might want to think twice about giving those shares away. You're depending on the cash flow. The other thing is you want to think about, what about the kids? Are they going to receive what we call a step up in tax basis or not? Does that matter? Is this a family situation? If it's a family farm or a family business, sometimes nobody cares about step up in tax basis because those kids are going to continue to hold that business for the rest of their lives and then hand it down. So there's all kinds of tax implications and other things, but it also includes that concept of making sure those shares are protected for Johnny or whoever you're transferring them to, and perhaps they go into a trust.
Okay, and so people come to me, business owners, and they're not only looking at possibly gifting it to the children, they're saying, well, I really don't know what I'm going to do with this if something happens. And usually in the back of my mind, I say something sparked up here that have said to them, you know, they need to start planning. Why is a valuation valuable from a legal perspective if they say, well, we not only want to try to look at gifting, but planning the estate?
We've had a number of situations where, let's just say you have one of the sons or daughters is very much involved in the business as an employee, and you kind of want to hand down an ownership interest to that particular person. Well, problem is you've got three kids. So you do gifting to that person, and let's say you gift $100,000 worth of stock to that person, and they become a co-owner with you. How do you deal with that on the estate plan? Because your estate plan says, at my death, everything goes equally to my kids. But the problem is you already gave $100,000 in stock to that particular individual. So we have to develop put into play an estate plan that would include, in that kind of a case, offset provisions that offset that particular gift by other assets that are held by you in that case.
All right, well,
yeah, no, I'm glad to have you here. There's so much information going around this hour. For everybody listening, get more information off of the air. You can go online. And by the way, you're listening to Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers, who's with us here, and Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group. I'll give you some phone numbers and some addresses real quick, so grab a pen and paper. Call Roland Davis with the Davis Business Appraisers, 757-410-3851. That's 410-3851. Or online for Davis Business Appraisers. That's dbavalue.com, dbavalue.com. And for Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group, not related, but you can give him a call at 757-420-7722. That's 420-7722, or go online to DLGVA.com. For Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group in Chesapeake and Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers. My friends, we're not over yet. We've got the home stretch to go, so if you have a question, don't wait any longer. Call now, 627-7979, and get your questions in before the conclusion of this live Ask the Expert show with Davis Business Appraisers, Roland Davis, and Doug Davis with Davis Law Group. Stay tuned. We'll be right back right here on Ask the Expert. Welcome back, everybody, here to News Talk 790 WNIS. It's now 6:51 here on this live Ask the Expert show. Coming up next hour at 7 o'clock, Washington Commanders and the Chicago Bears, right here, live Well, you're right here on WNIS. I guess it's live here on WNIS, but for the next few minutes, my friends, we're here with Roland Davis with Davis Business Appraisers, as well as Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group, talking about a lot of things when it comes to business ownership and avoiding some of the pitfalls. And when it comes to business valuations, make sure you get Davis Business Appraisers into your game and find out what you need to know. I'll give you the phone numbers and the websites before the conclusion of this show, so stay tuned for that. So last chance for phone calls. If you do have a question, 627-7979, and get the text version in here to the show. We had one caller who called in with a question about just needing some clarification on gifting of shares of businesses. And Doug, you wanted to address that briefly.
Yeah, so, and this can be very confusing for a lot of people. It's not an unusual question that we get, but basically, you can give up to $17,000 under current law every year to anybody you want, or multiple people, so 17 per person, per year, calendar year. And if you keep it to 17,000 or less, you do not have to report it to the IRS. So you don't file a tax return telling the IRS that you gave a gift, because you're under the $17,000 annual exclusion. No report to the IRS, no tax. If you give more than 17,000 per calendar year, then you have to a person. Then you have to file a gift tax return and let the IRS know that you gave more than 17,000. But unless you give more than 13 million under current tax law, you don't have to pay tax. So the reason for that is the $13 million lifetime credit is currently in effect. Congress changes that from time to time, and in 2025, that $13 million credit drops to $5 million. So anybody who gives $5 million or above $5 million at that time would be required to not only file a tax return, but also pay tax. I hope I explained that clearly. No, it's
well,
hard.
Well said. And I guess the last quick question on that is, so if you gave me $20,000, would you have to only pay taxes on the $3,000 that's above the $17,000?
You wouldn't pay any taxes.
That's right. Unless you've already given away $13 million.
Correct. I would have to file a tax return and report to the IRS that I gave you $3,000 more than the annual exclusion.
So they can keep a tally on you?
They
and make
keep
sure
a tally. Then when you pass away, Damien, then, or when I pass away, because I'm the one giving the gift, then they're going to find out how much I gave over the annual exclusion throughout my lifetime, and they're going to reduce whatever the credit is at the date of my death by that amount.
Oh.
And then if that amount exceeds the credit plus all my other assets that I'm giving away at death, then there's going to be tax due.
That gets complicated. More reasons to call Doug Davis with the Davis Law Group and Roland Davis, who we're listening to now with the Davis Business Appraisers.
And yes, I would like to go finally as a final topic on the show. A question I get asked in appraisal work an awful lot with appraisals. You have owners that are really been with the business, owned the business a long time. They bought a building. The building is fully paid for. They're a C corporation. And they say, we want you to value the business. And on the valuation side, most of them are not paying rent because they own the building. But as you do a business valuation on the business, which means you have to equate it with all other businesses out there. So I will remove the real estate from the business value. I will find a fair market rent, expense that to the business, and then after the valuation is completed, whatever the commercial value of that property is then added to that business value. That's how that's done. You can't double dip. You can't not pay rent and still get the income from the property on a valuation. You have to charge a market rent. Doug, how's this handled from a legal side when a couple comes and they've been owned the business for 40 years, it's all paid for, and now they say, how do we deal with this, with the valuation that this man's done for us?
Well, what I like to see is the commercial property owned in a separate limited liability company. And then that way you've got the business owned in the corporation. You've got the commercial property owned in an LLC. So you've completely separated those, and there's a written lease that establishes the rent and the value and who pays for, you know, the new HVAC system that needs to be repaired and whatever, the, you know, the all the obligations of a normal tenant. You want to see that in a written lease so that when you value, you have a clear distinction and you do have a written lease. And the nice thing about that, if you think about it, is let's say you want to sell your business. Okay, Roland's going to value your business, but then he can also value that commercial property if it's a part of the transaction. If it's not a part of the transaction, if the buyer isn't purchasing that building, then you can sell the building and you will then have a lease with the new buyer and you collect additional rent over the rest of your life if that's what you want to do. So you kind of get a benefit from the sale of the building, or from the sale of the business, and also from the rental of the property over time. And that's basically going to be installment, you know, an installment deal on the lease. So that's kind of nice.
And I'll jump out of valuation for a final comment, because I've dealt with a lot of transactions as representing confidentially in the region. I always say, if someone owns the building and the business, don't sell the building. Sell the business. The business property, you'll be a landlord and you'll get a commercial rent. That'll be your annuity. It'll also mean that when they come at you as a buyer and say, well, you know, everybody says if a seller really believes in this business, he'll hold a note for the sale of that business. And my comment is, no, they won't. But the fact that you're going to be the landlord gives you a vested interest. Nobody wants to have a tenant vacate a building. So there's a vested interest in having it continue. But I will say this on this. There is a time in your planning for your estate where I do valuations, and if that's the case, the first thing I'm going to say to you after I've looked at this and figured it out, you need to get to somebody and make sure that this is separated from the business, because you're going to find tax-wise and you're going to find logistic-wise, this is a nightmare. And so, Doug, I appreciate you coming on. And that's Doug Davis. And he's with Davis Law Group. And he's such a valuable resource and a trusted legal advisor to so many wonderful people in the region. And I'm just so proud that he came on tonight to talk about this. So,
thank you, Roland. Great to be here. Great to be here, Damian. Appreciate it.
Doug, it's been a pleasure. And Roland, it's been a pleasure. And gentlemen, thank you so much. Very worthwhile information this hour. Again, everybody listening, follow up with more information online at dbavalue.com. For Davis Business Appraisers and Roland Davis, dbavalue.com. Call 757-410-3851. That's 410-3851. And for Doug Davis of the Davis Law Group in Chesapeake, 757-420-7720. That's 420-7722 or dlgva.com. I'm Damian Hall with WNIS.
Paid for by Davis Business Appraisers, who's entirely responsible for its content.